Jerusalem. How I long for you to gaze at your walls.
Shalom and welcome to this week's Living Torah. A couple of quick things. Number one, you see that we're continuing got this background thing going on. And for the a couple of people that have said and have already sent and have said they're sending a little extra as far as donations, I appreciate that. I'm not spending thousands of dollars on a new studio, believe me. But there is some expenses that we need to cover as we're doing some things. And that leads me to one of the most exciting projects I've been involved in for quite some time. And that is a podcast called Life on Purpose with my son Daniel and also Ryan Cribbs, David Covert of Exodus Road Band. We recorded our first episode last night, working on a couple things, waiting on a couple things I have to have in place before we're able to put that up online. But it should be fairly soon, I'm thinking in the next few days, maybe even by the time this recording is released. It's wonderful when the Father just steps in and shows you something, and sometimes He does that in some pretty interesting ways. Last night, as we were getting set up to do our recording together, we've got to be on Zoom. We've got four different computers, four different people, and there's a lot of things that have to come together to pull that off. I sent out a link to the guys, or I was about to, about 5 o'clock. We were going to record at 6, and at 5 o'clock, my internet went down. I mean, not just went down like, you know, we're on Frontier. Anybody that has Frontier knows that you can have some moments with them, but, you know, for the most part, it's fairly reliable, a lot better than dial-up used to be. So 5 o'clock comes along and everything just fries. My router will not connect with my computer. It says it's on, but it doesn't know what it is. It doesn't know who it is. It doesn't know to connect anything. It's just shot. I call Frontier and finally got through to customer service. That was a miracle in itself. And they said, well, sir, we'll have somebody out next Monday. Well, that doesn't help me a lot last night on a Monday night. Okay, whatever you want to do. And so I started looking around and thinking, okay, we're in a rural area. I've got a phone. I can connect on hotspot. There's no way. I've never been able to connect a hotspot on my phone and be able to do anything on my computer, really. Well, I connected up and somehow had the best speeds. Had the best speeds I've ever had, and we ran the whole program, an hour program we ran off my phone through the computer, connecting with Daniel up north of me and in Blue Ridge, and it was kind of like the enemy showed his hand, that this is not something that he would like to have put out there, a podcast, which is multi-generational. And just some great guys to work with. It was fun last night. And the information on how to subscribe to that, I've already learned, been told, been corrected. You don't sign up for a podcast, okay? You subscribe to a podcast. So those of you that, you know, you need to get your language right, just I had to because they told me that. So it's exciting. It's coming out pretty soon. Again, thank you to everyone who, not just in helping a little bit here with the studio, which is basically my office, but for those of you who have been so faithful to give on one time, overtime, monthly, whatever, this allows us to, when an opportunity like this comes about, I don't have to stop and say, I wonder if we can afford it, because you guys have been so faithful through the years, and I thank you so much for that. With that, we have the festivals coming up. I'm going to be talking about that at the end of this program a little bit. And so in order to get there, I guess we better get to the beginning, which is the word Ray. Now, if anybody doesn't know what the word Ray means, you haven't been listening to me long, or you haven't been listening to me. This word is translated sea, which is one of those English translations that really doesn't do it justice. It is a resh, an aleph, and a hey. Resh, aleph, hey, which is the word resh, or the word ray. And so, to go back to piggybacking, is piggybacking kosher? I don't know. Hey, I saw the greatest thing the other day. Non-pork rinds. I didn't buy any, but I just thought it was kind of funny. What are they made of? Probably crickets, so we still can't eat them. That's the whole thing coming out right now. And I found out that this is going to be the next big one in Messianic Hebrew Roots movement. Are crickets kosher? Just mark my words. Somebody's going to start arguing about that. I don't care if they're kosher or not. I'm not eating them, but from what I've been told, they're not kosher. So to go off of some of Brad Scott's teaching from Brad Scott of Blessed Memory, his teaching is that the center letter actually drives the letter. This is a three-letter root, and so the center letter is the one that drives it, which is the aleph, which is the strength. It is known as the strength of the ox. In ancient Paleo-Hebrew, it would have looked like an ox. The resh is the beginning or the head, and the hey is the breath. The breath, the authority. We have the letters Yud Hey Vav Hey in the name of Yah, and it is that letter that you produce not with your the moving of your lips, but it's literally the breath, the breathing out of our lungs. And so this word, we could look at it like this, is that there is strength in hearing the voice of the one who is from the beginning. Right? Wow, that's a lot more than just see, isn't it? The strength that we receive when we hear the breath and authority and act upon that, the breath and the authority of the one who is the head, who is the one who is from the one who is from the beginning. And why would we receive strength from hearing the words of the one who is from the beginning? Because we're then able to do what the word is actually translated as by Strong, which is perceive. So when I hear his voice, and this is also his voice, remember, when we're reading the words, this is the recorded version of the voice, MP3 version here, okay? That this is as much his voice as if we're praying about something and we feel like we hear something, we hear a voice that's directing us. Well, that voice, first of all, must line up with this voice, okay? I've had many people that have come to me through the years and, you know, God told me something. And it was like, no, I there's nothing about what you just said that can be backed up from any word in this word, okay? So you might want to just credit that one to too much kosher pepperoni on your pizza last night. Well, then there's the voice that we hear that lines up with the voice of the word, which allows us to perceive that which is happening in our world, and therefore gain strength to walk out the days of our world. How's that for one word there, okay? So it is. It goes on and it says that I'm setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you listen to the mitzvot, and a curse if you don't. Now, you know, these words, to understand them a little bit further, is if we start looking at what the concept is, all right, this is not that he is sitting up there in the heavenly realm with a yardstick, with a ruler, I guess a ruler would be better, or a paddle. You know, you remember those? Some of you do. Yeah, I remember way too many of them. He's sitting up there with a paddle, and he's just waiting for you to step out of line. And this is actually kind of the concept that many people have of the Almighty, is that he's just up there in the heavens looking down with this angry... This comes from Marcion teaching. He's looking down from the heavens just waiting for you to mess up. And the moment that you do something wrong, he's coming down and he's going to take you to the woodshed and he's going to give it to you. Come on, guys. He is a... As the song, one of my favorite songs, he's a good, good father. And he does discipline us, yes. But he also shows love and mercy, the blessing and the curse. Now, I think that part of the this word Baruch or blessing, we would understand further if we go to the word curse and understand what that one is. The word curse means more of this line is that you will become insignificant. Look it up. You will become insignificant. Insignificant where? In his kingdom purposes. So let me ask you a question. I think I would know the answer to this from everyone that I personally know that watches this or listens to it on whatever venue you have. And by the way, we're on Hebrew Nation Radio. They're doing some fundraising right now. They're asking just for the listener $3 a month. So I put that plug in that Roland asked me to put in. So it's a viable place. There's all kinds of places you can go and you can listen. But I think most people would say, yes, I want to be significant in the kingdom. So if we're going out and we're breaking the commandments, if we're not perceiving the importance of the commandments, if we're not walking in the commandments, we're going to be kind of insignificant because we're going to take our relationship with him in a kind of a flippant manner. Let me give you an example. I used this actually on my podcast yesterday. I played golf yesterday morning, and there's a guy there that is kind of interesting. He's got a real love for Israel, but he's one of these that likes to hand out tracts and stuff. And once I got tracked the other day, I found one on my windshield, and he came all the way from one fairway to another fairway. And he drives up, he goes, Mike, I got a question for you. It's like, yeah. He says, do you have Jesus in your heart? And he said it just like that, okay. Do you have Jesus? You know something's off when it's a three-syllable word there. And I just looked at him. And there's another guy on his cart. I'm walking. And that's my purpose of playing, really, is to, because I'm terrible at the game, but get some good exercise out there. And so this other guy on the cart, I'm hesitating. I'm really hesitating in my answer, and because this attitude that is there, and I'm not judging the guy, this is just my perception, is there's this flippant attitude toward relationship. You know, do you have Jesus in your heart? That's all, you know, it's just a one-liner kind of thing. And the other guy on the cart, I do. Okay, fine, you know, and... what bothers me is a lot of people that say they're following Messiah and have Messiah in their heart, they need to let him control their mouths, because I hear the language that comes out of those mouths. And as a man thinks in his heart, I think Proverbs talks about, that's what's going to come out of your mouth. Okay, again, not being judgmental. This is just to go with something here. And I finally said, well, Yeshua, I would call him Yeshua HaMashiach. I said, his mama never called him Jesus. And he was okay with that and ran off. And I'm gonna make on purpose, I'm going to go to him the next time I see him. And I'm going to explain to him why I hesitated. And my answer is going to be this, that my relationship with the Almighty is not just about a one-liner, but I want him to have I want him to be a part of my, not just my heart, but my whole life. That's what we should be doing. And when he is part of our whole life, then we should be doing everything we can to be significant in his kingdom. And the significance in his kingdom, or the insignificance, is based upon what people see in us, their perception. Because let's face it, okay? The perception that someone has about the Almighty, about the Creator, about God, about Yudhei Vave, however you want to address him in this, the perception that people have about him is how they perceive him through us. And so if I'm living in a flippant manner in my relationship with him, or if we have kind of boiled him down, if as it were, to a couple of one-liners, or a track that you leave on someone's windshield, but you're not willing to enter into the difficulties of maybe building a relationship with that person, then what do they see as, what do they see the perception of the Almighty through us? It's a serious question, is it not? This chapter goes on and talks about going, the Hebrews are going to stand as they enter the land. They're going to go to along what is called the Valley of Bread, which comes right by Itamar and then Elon Moreh, one of my favorite places, Elon Moreh, to stand there and to have this view. It's the same view that Abram had before he became Abraham. He has this view of the, what is, it was at that time, Shechem, today, modern day Nablus, which is occupied territory, by the way, this huge sprawling thing that's there, with Joseph right there in the center of it, still as a witness to the title deed that was given as this land was actually purchased. So that's another subject. On the left-hand side, the south side would be Mount Gerizim, the Mount of Blessing, with this is the town of Har Berakah. And then on the north side is Mount Ebal. It's called the Mount of Blessing, the Mount of Curses. A lot of things that are going there on there. But they were to come when they entered the land. They were to come and they were to stand between the two mountains, and the terms of the covenant would be read in their hearing. It is not that they were standing, you know, up on top of this mountain and on top of this mountain. It was that they were standing between. And the thought is this to me today, that as they stood there, and they heard the words of the covenant, they had to make a decision. Not as much a physical decision at that moment, because their physical tribal inheritance would be assigned to them. But they would have to make a spiritual decision. And then that spiritual decision would be taken with them into the physical land of their inheritance that was going to be assigned to them. The decision was based on this: which mountain will I choose to live on? Will I choose to live in the significance of the Mount of Blessing, or the insignificance of the Mount of Curses, of Mount Ebal? Joshua, as we read, would build an altar on Mount Ebal. There's no altar on Mount Gerizim. There is the Samaritans and that whole thing with the Northern Kingdom, which happened. I won't go into that right now. But there's an altar on Mount Ebal, And I asked, the first time I went up there, it was just a curious thing. Of course, Mount Gerizim, I'm told, has 14 freshwater springs. Mount Ebal has none. So it's dry, it's barren. There's no vines. There's no, you know, you look at Mount Gerizim, there's vineyards, there's olives, there's figs. There's some of the most incredible figs in the world are on Mount Gerizim. These things are huge and sweet. Oh yes, I got to get back there. But Mount Ebal, there's nothing. It's barren. There's no water. There's no fruit. There's no produce. It's barren. But there's an altar. And the message is this, that when you live, when you choose to walk away from the brakah, the blessings of the Almighty, to live in the covenant, then in order to, you're going to find yourself in a dry, barren, desert place. And it is there that you will have to come to an altar. An altar of sacrifice, an altar of the Messiah, to then be restored back to the blessings of Mount Gerizim. My question would be this, or how many people could say that they're living between the mountains? Guys, in this day that we live, this is not a time to live between the mountains. This is a time to choose which mountain you're going to live on. As for me and my house, the decision is to live on Mount Gerizim, and we got a view. Okay, you got a view of Mount Ebal, but I don't want to live there. Moving on, chapter 12 is we're going to go all the way down to verse 8 here. And this is a verse that one of our segments on Life on Purpose is going to be a verse from the coming week's Torah, as we're going to just work in the relevance of that. And Daniel brought out something last night that I thought was very interesting. And if you want to read the context of all of this, but it says, "You will not do things the way we do them here today, where everyone does what is in his own opinion seems right," or as we see in some of the writings of the history, everyone was doing what was right in his own eyes, in his own perception, tying it back to the first word of this Torah portion. I'm going to do everything that I perceive. And the word here is, what is right is actually what is yeshar, or straight. So I'm choosing my path. Well, if we go to Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, Yeshua talks about entering the narrow gate. There is a broad way that leads to destruction, but there is a narrow gate that brings forth life. I don't know about you, but I have really perceived in my own walk in the last few years that it seems that gate is narrowing down a bit in our day. What do you think? Have you seen that in your own life? That it wasn't that, you know, you were living in sin. Okay, maybe you were, but it wasn't necessarily sin. But it's just that things seem to be narrowing down a little bit, that the path to destruction is everywhere around us. But this straight and narrow path, it's almost like a funnel that we're being led into. The great thing is about this is there is a light. Let me say it like this. There's a light at the end of the funnel, okay? And it's not a train. Some people have said, you know, well, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and then they figure out it's a freight train coming at them full speed. No, it's not a freight train. The light at the end of the funnel is the kingdom. Hear your people weep, oh, Jerusalem, oh, Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, how I long for you to gaze at your walls, to walk on your street.
The kingdom of Yah. And for those of us that are perceiving that that kingdom is approaching, or that we are approaching the kingdom, I guess I should say, then that narrowing that we're going through should actually produce a longing. And this is where Daniel was going last night, that even this verse, that it seems that everyone today does what is right in their own eyes. I see that in conversations with people, even with, you know, people that are following the Torah, Messianic, Hebrew roots, whatever. It's like, you know, you've already got your mind made up. Maybe there was this narrowing. You're going to have to leave some things to the side yourself. That one thing about this difference of the, you know, the broad gate and the narrowing is that we're going to have to see things His way, not my way. Okay, that's the narrowing, is that we need to see things His way. There's a way that seems right unto man, right? And it's the way of destruction. There's also a way that's good, and here's my terminology here, and there's a way that's good, and there's a way that's God. The difference between the word good and God is one letter, which is the letter O. I believe that stands for man's opinion. So what is this going to be saying? What is this saying to us? That as we enter, as we come closer to the kingdom, the light at the end of the funnel, that we're going to have to lose our opinions regarding things to accept His ways. I don't know about you. I mean, that's not easy. I'd love to say, well, that I've got that all down. No, I don't. You know, a lot of people can attest to that one. But I find that the challenge of that is something that gives me great comfort, that excites me in a way, that my opinions start to the baggage of my opinions begin to fade away as we come closer to that light at the end of the funnel. One of the things that we're going to have to make a decision on here is in chapter 13. And first of all, it talks about a prophet. And it says, if a prophet or someone who gets messages while dreaming arises among you, and he gives you a sign and a wonder. Now, look at the words, among you. All right, this is not, you know, this is not, you know, some heathen pagan teaching, okay? It is among you, within this walk that we're in. Not everyone is a righteous prophet. Not everyone is a righteous teacher. Not everyone is a righteous leader in this. And he says, and the sign of one, and gives you a sign or wonder, and the sign or wonder comes about as he predicted when he said, let's follow other God. Okay, so he's telling you something, and he's giving a sign and wonder. We're not called to follow signs and wonders. Go to the book of Acts. It says that signs and wonders followed them. They did not follow signs and wonders. Remember, there was a sect of the Pharisees that was looking for signs and wonders instead of looking for the one of the signs and wonders. They were looking for something that was, you know, that was sensational, that would give them some nice warm fuzzies and goosebumps and all those kind of things. Here's somebody that raised up in the midst of you that says something, but in the end they say, we need to follow other gods which you have not known. Well, what is this? This is this is a person that raises up and says, you know, we really don't need to follow that Torah thing. We can come up with our own denominational structure. We can come up with our own statement of doctrines. We can come up with our own book, you know, kind of based on some gold tablets or something that have never been produced. Or we can come up with, a dream that was given to someone on a mysterious midnight ride that never actually happened, and there's never been any evidence of anything. But here's the evidence, is following another god, or as one religion making gods of yourself and saying, well, I can become as God. That's following another god. Okay? Making yourself as God, or desiring to make yourself as God, is following another god than the true Elohim. Just my opinion. But what does it say about this person? The word says you're to cut him off. It says you're to put him to death. Okay? Now, when we talk about putting him to death, this is, that's against the law in our day. All right? I don't know how it's going to be done in the kingdom or how it should have been done then, but today, what does this mean? You cut them off. You cut them off as if they are dead from you. Think about that. I pick on YouTube prophets a lot. Why? Because there's a lot of YouTube prophets out there. Think back. Here's a major problem. Is that most people have a very short memory and don't remember the last thing that the so-called prophet said that didn't come true. Or maybe some of it did, but in the end, following a different god, pledging allegiance, let me say this coded, but I think that many of you will understand what I'm saying. Pledging allegiance to the wrong kingdom. Consider that statement that I just made. Think about that one. Pledging allegiance to the wrong kingdom. If a prophet, even though they may say some things that came true along the way, but they were causing you to, or asking you to pledge allegiance to the wrong kingdom, then they are to be cut off. How do we cut them off? You unsubscribe. You don't unsign up. You unsubscribe to their YouTube channel. And then when it comes up on your feed, you don't sign up, you don't subscribe again. You don't go, well, I wonder what they're saying this time. Because they've proven themselves to be a false prophet. Now, here's the other side of this that gets a little bit closer to home, literally, is in verse 7 or 6, depending on your translation. Let me just read these words. If your brother, the son of your mother, or your son, or your daughter, or your wife whom you love, or your friend who means as much to you as yourself, secretly tries to entice you to go and serve other gods which you haven't known, neither you nor your ancestors, goes on from there. You are not to consent, you are not to listen to them, and you must not pity him or spare him. You may not conceal him. Rather, you must kill him. And it goes on and says, and your own hand is to be the first one in his neck. Huh. Okay, this isn't the YouTube prophet. This is a relative, a son, a daughter, a spouse that causes you to walk away, entices you to walk away from the covenant of the Torah. So let's run with this. If your relative, you made that great announcement that you no longer eat, crickets, and you look at the back of the Cheetos and it now says crickets, and you say, sorry, and they say, well, it's either crickets or me. Bye. If your relative, even to the point of your spouse, is enticing you to walk away from Shabbat, is enticing you to celebrate different festivals, what does the word say? Okay, I'm not going to make the declaration here. You read the verses for yourself, and you come to the conclusion. What are you to do? Now, let me expound on this a little bit. Okay, again, we're not to kill them, but there is a point. There is a point in time that you have to make a decision. I'm not going to be a part of what you do. If what you're doing, if your actions that you choose, if those actions cause me, entice me to walk away from the covenant that I walk in Messiah, by faith, which brings forth obedience, then something's got to go. And it's not going to be him. So here we are coming up on these days, all right? It's the end of August, which means October's coming, which means December's coming. We have a decision to make during those days. I can go to a person and I can say, listen, I disagree. I'm going to love you. But if you decide that this is what you're going to do on those days, then I won't be coming to your house during those days. I'm not going to walk through demonic decorations in order to come visit you. I'll make it another time because I will not be enticed. I will not be drug in to the things that you're doing. I'd be glad to have a conversation with you. I'll be glad to give you the research. I'll be glad to open up the word with you. Whatever it takes, I'm not cutting off the relationship, but what I am doing is I am cutting off your ability to entice me into the life that you're choosing. I know, but it's narrow is the way, period. Somebody can charge me guilty of being pretty black and white in some things. Guilty is charged, okay? But if it's not okay in the kingdom, then it's not okay in my life today. That's the decision I desire to walk in. Okay, moving on. Verse 14. This all comes to this concept here in chapter 14. Because you are a people set apart as holy for Yudei Vavei Yer Elohim, Yudei Vavei Yer Elohim has chosen you for his own unique treasure out of all the peoples on the face of the earth. King Jimmy translates it as you are to be a peculiar people. I've been around some folks that have taken that to an extreme. I love what Eddie Chumney said at Revive. He said, this movement, I think that this movement has brought in, has invited people in that are in, or attracted, yeah, there you go, I got the word. This movement is attracted two groups of people. The truth seekers and the freak shows. And, you know, I think that Eddie spoke it right there. The truth seekers and the freak shows. It has, because some people have taken that word out of King James of a peculiar people and taken it a little bit to the extreme. What do you think? We're not to be peculiar as far as being, you know, just certifiable crazy, but we are to be a unique treasure. And the word here is this. Here's the concept. You and I, those of us that are walking in the covenant of Messiah, those of us that are walking in the instructions of the house, which is what the Torah is, the instructions of the house, you and I are his treasure. We are his value. We are his riches upon this earth. If you were to go to, you're trying to impress somebody, what do? You know, somebody that's rich and famous, they have all this stuff. They have the big houses and the nice cars and all of this kind of, and that's their riches upon this earth, which I think the scripture talks about moths and rust and things like that. What's our real rich? What is our riches upon this earth? Is it not the covenant? The one of the covenant? Is that not what makes us rich upon this earth? That we perceive that this realm that we're living in, this is just a realm we're living in, but we're looking forward to another realm that is much greater than this one, the light at the end of the funnel. Got to coin that one, say it a few times so I remember it here. But if in the heavenly realm, the angels, demonic beings, whatever, were to come into the throne room as they did with Job. I mean, consider what happened in Job. Have you considered my servant Job? Have you considered, he looked right at Hasatan and he said this, have you considered my riches, which is my servant Job? That got Job in some trouble, but in the end it came out pretty good for him. Have you if in the heavenly realm the enemy was to come in, Hasatan was to come into that courtyard, would the Almighty look down and call out your name and say, have you considered my riches that are there and put your name with it? Wow. Yeah, think about that one for a little while. And on the end of that, you know, right on the end, after we go off through that of your a unique treasure, what does he go into? He goes into kosher. Ah, he goes into what we eat and don't eat. I don't believe that we really, or I really realize just how important in the scheme of things this thing of what we put into our body is, you know? What is kosher, what is not? Because it's something, you know, every week on Shabbat, we have the ability every week to walk out the covenant. Every month, Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, we have the ability. But eating is something you do on a daily basis. So it's a daily act of worship. It's our daily act of being his riches, of making a choice what we consume and place into our tabernacle. And then it goes on to other outward expressions, one of them being the Shemitah. We're in a Shemitah year now, and this is the time of releasing people from debts. We have, you know, until the end of this Hebrew year, the calendar year, and maybe it's finances. Maybe you've got, you know, you loan somebody some money and you need to look at them and say, debt forgiven. We're done. Maybe if somebody loaned you some money and you think, wow, this, you know, this is the end of the Shemitah and I got them over a barrel now. Maybe you ought to make it a priority to get the debt paid before the end of the Shemitah year. You hadn't thought about that one, huh? Go to your credit union or whatever and say, I've got a car loan and it's coming up on the Shemitah year, so you need to forgive it. They're probably not going to do that because that's not in, you know, they're not living according to biblical principles. They're living in this other realm here. So don't try that with your car payment or your house payment. You might find yourself, homeless and walking, but different story. But what about those within the household? What about those that are around us? We need to give. We need to forgive debts. But how about the non-financial stuff? How about the other side? The debts of somebody did something wrong? Forgiving people? How long have you been holding on to that? How many Shemitahs? Shemitahs every 7 years. How many Shemitahs have you walked through consciously not forgiving the debt? And how much blessing is being held back because how much significance in the kingdom is being held back because of refusal to forgive debts? Remember what happened with the Northern Kingdom. You know, because they did, it was multiplied. Remember what happened at Daniel, you know, in the book of Daniel. It becomes multiplied. Maybe this is a good year to say, I'm finished with the debts that I'm holding. I'm going to forgive and forgive totally. Chapter 16 is, of course, the festivals. The festivals are coming. The fall festivals are going to be upon us very, very soon of Yom Teruah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Don't wait. Don't wait any longer. At Life Assembly, we're going to actually talk about that this week, this Shabbat, about our plans for the festivals and try to lay out some things that we're going to be doing. It's going to be a little different because a lot of our congregation is going right from there to Israel. So, you know, we're not going to be traveling all over the place and taking vacation time that many people don't have. But, you know, in the end, you need to start planning if you haven't started to plan that. And I want to just quickly, as I've got just about a minute and a half here, talking about Sukkot, they're not to show up before Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh empty-handed. In accordance, but every man is to give what he can, and the words what he can in accordance is not actually in the scripture, but in the original. They are not to show up before Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh empty-handed in accordance with the blessing Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh your Elohim has given you. So with this, I will, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, I'll be going to Israel. We actually leave October 30th. I'll be there for 2 weeks. And I will be, as I always do when I go, I take funds. I can tell you right now, there's just been very, very little giving to Israel. And I understand economy. I got that. I mean, I'm in ministry. I had to fill up with gas yesterday. I walked into Ingalls and they said, oh, sir, it's on us because you're in ministry. No, that didn't happen. They took the $55 out of my pocket and they, you know, I think she said thank you. But I understand the economy and all those things, but would you consider praying about an offering to give? Be glad to take that right after Sukkot. If you would, you can send that into our office, just put Israel on there. But this is a way of us connecting, even though we're still in exile in the diaspora, this is a way of us connecting with the land. So with that, Shabbat Shalom, Shavua Tov, have a blessed, prosperous week. Bezrat Hashem, God willing, see you again next week. And until then, be strong.